on the fans. It's one for them, isn't it? I know it's a cliche, but it really is.
Listen, it's incredible. You know, I didn't know what to do. I stayed a little bit out for the players. Then I came in, and then I went out when everybody was gone. And it's an incredible day. I know how important this is, and I know how happy they're going to be. So I don't think it's a better way to celebrate Christmas than beating Newcastle.
Smiling faces in here today. Since we've been doing the show, we've won every derby game, so we'll take credit for that. Long may it continue. This is Wise Men Say. We're in association with the Love Supreme, and we're talking the derby game tonight. Smiling faces, that's for sure. Craig, would you like to do your Steve Bruce? That's for sure.
No.
Go on.
So I don't want memories of him.
Well, we're playing him this weekend.
He's the last one to lose one, isn't he?
That's the voice of Craig Clark, as I'm sure you're aware. He was here last week as well, back by popular demand. Partly, mainly because I forgot to sort some guests out. So, Gareth hastily encouraged Craig to come yesterday. Gary Foster's also here, freelance journalist, and he's not one who's ever held back on his Sunderland affiliation like some journalists. Loud and proud, Gary, as ever.
Always, unless I'm standing in the Gallagher, I'm always.
Right, okay. I'm going to hear from Gus first of all to start the show. You heard from him at the start there, obviously. That was Gareth working for Sun FM. Going to hear from him on the four wins in a row now, if I can sort myself out.
I think that's what I like to be. You know, me as a person, as a sportman, I always want to be remembered for something nice, you know, for the bad side. And we've been doing a few, you know, even in a difficult season last season with... We broke a few records, and to be in this one is a very special one. I'm sure that if you really are top and crazy Sunderland fan, you will remember this run of games because there is no better feeling.
Top crazy Sunderland fan. Craig, you're in that bracket. That's three in a row now for you at St James, is it?
Yeah, I've only been to three, and we've not conceded and scored seven. So
how does that rate?
It's up there, isn't it? It's up there.
In terms of less hostile from the Newcastle fans every time because they're kind of expecting this.
It's funny, you can't really, like, I've been positioned near the big telly every time I've been there. It's like miles away from any of their fans, like quite literally. They're either like right down, I'm always near the back as well, so they're either too far down to here or too far to the side, and then you notice them pipe up about two or three times singing that tune crap, and then they just fizzle
very
out again.
Yeah. That one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great, aye. But as my football hating friend Chris said, "Tune, why do they say that? They're a city, aren't they?" He's got a point. Like, what exactly are they on about?
Don't try and reason with them, Craig.
Oh no, I'm not reasoning with them. I'm just saying.
There's a difference. Saying, don't.
I like the term of them.
Don't engage. Don't engage with
them, isn't it? I just want to know what people thought before we get on the game. I thought both managers conduct themselves well afterwards. Gareth, obviously you supported Gus, so you heard from Pardew. There wasn't really any excuses from him. He credited Sunderland as well.
Well,
thought it was interesting. Now, by his standards, he's still Gus was kind quite of, respectful as well. Wasn't he
was borderline wanted to say it was a moral victory because he went for it. Chucked the kids in
well,
and went 4-4-2.
Well, more on that later. First, we'll hear more from Gus again on the game in general.
First, I said it then, and I think it's important to repeat this. It's a very difficult moment because I'm very, you know, respectful. And to celebrate the goal in the last minute away from home against the biggest rival and maintain that calm is difficult. And I hope that what we showed was as much respect as you can celebrating a goal or a victory. So we didn't try to do nothing more than celebrating with our fans. It's incredible. If you give me the chance, 3-0 or 1-0 in the last minute, you put me in a big, difficult position because the feeling that you have winning the game the way that we've done it today is unforgettable. And we needed that. We needed that, you know, every week something happened. We couldn't win, we couldn't score. To do in this game at that moment in time is very special. I said it to everybody, so I'm going to be fair with you and I'm going to tell you as well. We were changing Jono before he scored because we were looking for someone to go in behind. Now, just before the change was ready to be made, Jono made a run in behind, checked back and missed the chance. And because he done that, he's still on the pitch. So that moment is the moment made us win the game because then we decided to change corner. And then Jono goes to win the game for us. So there is moments. But the idea was to keep going in behind them. It was never to take a striker to put a winger thinking on defending. It was to try to get that break.
Okay, Gareth, you mentioned what part you did there, the substitution you made. We might as well start with that then. We need to thank him for taking a striker off and putting a midfielder on. See, this is what happens when you go for it, isn't it?
What? I think you got that the wrong way around.
He
brought Cissé on.
Cissé on. What a
striker, not a midfielder.
Well, brought Armstrong on first, didn't he?
He got the wrong way around. Sure you said it the other way around.
Did I? Well, he put a striker on. That's going for it, obviously. The other one wouldn't be going for it, would it?
I'm just keeping you right.
This is what happens, though, isn't it?
Who did Armstrong come on for? So that was like, he's a Geordie. Let's put him on.
You're saying about Pardew trying to claim a moral victory, and Phil Neville on Match of the Year too, saying Pardew shouldn't be too downhearted because he went for it. Decision has lost you the game. You know, you're losing against your derby rivals every game. Don't lose first and foremost. Mm. Make a decision like that. This is what we keep telling people. You know, we aren't just idiots talking on a radio show. Well, we are maybe, but you know, there is something behind what we're saying, isn't there? Know your place in the Premier League hierarchy and going for it. This is what happens, Gary, when you go for it. Throw the kids in, two up front, three up front, and they've lost the game because of it, haven't they?
They have, but, and I'm glad they have, but
it's put that one out there.
I think sometimes we're too negative. I think sometimes he takes a striker off or plays a striker in the wrong position, and I'm not trying to be a downer on a day like today, but I can see why Pardew did it. I'm pleased it backfired, but I don't know. That Armstrong had about three or four goals at goal. All right, none of them were really dangerous.
It was more the second substitution that killed it for him, wasn't it?
But I mean, he's been banging the goals in for them, hasn't he? He's been coming off super subs, so you can see why he tried it. Didn't work. Champion,
I was happy when he did that, Craig. What did you think?
Reeked of Steve Bruce. It was like, I remember losing against them at home 1-0. I think it was only one, and I think we actually ended the game with nine men. But Bruce brought Wickham on, I think, and he already had a couple of strikers on, and his tactic was literally have strikers on in a line up front and hope they score. There was no way of actually finding them, creating a chance for them, and I felt like throughout the game they had possession, but unless Sissoko was going to do a bit of magic and like burst through using his fit, sort of pace and physicality, or Perez might have, you know, he was quite lively, they weren't really going to create anything. And I don't think that bringing Papa Cissé on for Cheick Tiote is going to create a chance. He's only going to score. I mean, I talked to a number of Newcastle fans today at work, and none of them think he's a footballer. He's just a goal scorer. So you bring him on, but they never had a creator on the pitch, really, besides Sissoko. Maybe Perez dropping deep might have fashioned something, but it just never... Their shots were all long range, apart from Armstrong getting in behind that time, but he actually made the wrong decision. He should have squared it for Sissoko, and they would have took the lead. Probably would have won the game, because he then wouldn't have gone back and taken off a defensive midfielder and brought a striker on. And I'm not saying if he'd brought Cissé on rather than Armstrong that would have happened, because Cissé probably wouldn't have passed the ball. He's not that type of player either. But technically, he lost the game. I thought as soon as he's done that, Poyet's got them here. That's what he wanted, because they pressed the possession so much higher.
Take control of the game,
We had three or four brilliant opportunities.
Control the game for about 35 minutes in the first half.
But then you just surrender in the last element of control you have by doing that, aren't you?
They were just desperate, I thought.
Looking back, I don't think Pantelimon actually made a save until the second half, did he?
Well, he made a couple early on where they...
Save where that was going to be a goal. I think some of them were like, you could have threw your cap on a couple of them and stopped it. But I think he made a couple of decent saves or good saves in the second half, and that was the only time there, really.
We had excellent chances and just did not test Anik at all. I mean, even after we scored and we'd won the game, I couldn't get that Gomez chance out of my head. It was just running through on a loop. It was like a vine in my mind. It was just like,
it was bizarre that he decided to use the side of his foot.
I'd have expected him to take several touches, three or four minutes to make a decision, and then maybe he's put his foot through it. He's the last one I would expect to be rash.
It was like when we played him a few years ago, we drew ones each, and a chance for Andy Reid in the last couple of minutes as well. Can you remember that with his left foot and he missed?
Vaguely,
and that was one of the ones where you were thinking, oh, I think you wanted that to fall at anybody. Reed. And it fell to Reed and he put it wide, I think. I think that was when Sabregi was in charge and we drew a 1-1.
I don't really know what he was like doing. Like what was like his body shape, he seemed to get himself in the most unnatural position and then kind of like it was like, you know, like half time when they do the penalties against Samson the Cat and like his 5-year-old comes on to take one and does that. That's what it was like. It was bizarre. He was really good in the game as well.
I couldn't get over the Wickham miss either.
The header.
Yeah,
that was bizarre.
I mean, I
put Wickham off a little bit with that. Coming up behind him.
I mean, my first reaction was to scream, I could have scored that. And there's people who play with me on a Saturday morning that didn't disagree, so it must have been easy.
Well, there's a few people, from where we were, it looked a good chance, but maybe not as good as some people have said who've seen it on the telly. You know, you get one look of it, you're right up, and I haven't seen it again since. But the impression I'm getting is maybe he should, and something I get the impression with Wickham and his general players, use your strength, use your physicality. The one time he did was to wipe Anik out. And I think if that wasn't Anik in goal, if that's Tim Crull, he doesn't get booked. I think he's booking him because it's a weak keeper who's had a lot of press.
And the chances are the party and his staff have gone up with the ref before the game. Yeah, so these are going to target like the keeper ref, keep an eye on it. But, you would do as well. Anybody would do that.
Why didn't he do that at the back post? Yeah. And just go, this is my ball, I'm going to score this.
Anik wasn't anywhere near it, that's why.
Yeah, so all right. Maybe he's that, shall we say, thick, that he can only do exactly what he's told.
We talked already about Conor Wickham's decision making. I think, you know, that is, again, it's going to come, isn't it? 21, I think.
He's getting better every week, I think. He's from that position, he's learning it. And he's doing quite well. I thought he had a bad game.
I just thought that was a really bad miss.
No, it was.
Oh, yeah.
And he could probably might have done better with the header from Virginie's cross as well.
Mm. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. Aye.
I think
that was weak.
Because there wasn't a lot of power on the cross, but at the same time, he's a powerful bloke. You would have thought he'd be able to direct it, like maybe go back across the keeper, a bit like Fletcher did against Palace.
It's as if, like you say, there wasn't loads of power, and it's as if he was thinking about trying to generate as much power as he could, rather than try to move it to one side of the keeper. Yeah,
speaking of Fletcher, great.
Well, I want to ask you about that, because, you know, obviously when you're at a game, it's different from watching it through the TV screen. Now, I watched the game, it looked like Fletcher didn't care, but everybody who was there made a comment on how outstanding he was. So.
Movement, control, possession. I can't sing his praises highly enough.
Lone striker role, that's not a worry for him.
Phenomenal.
That moment when he got the ball down on the halfway line, he had four defenders, and he just held it, took a pass one, held it, took a pass another, then played it wide, and it was just absolute quality.
If he had a little bit of extra pace around him somewhere, ideal. Like, he's starting to look like he fits. Gus has really done that with a couple of them, hasn't he?
It's probably the one thing
it's
that,
encouraging
that side's
working
missing,
with
them, isn't it?
Yeah.
The pace.
Gareth asked Gus about Fletcher.
You went with Altidore last week to try and stretch teams, and this week it was Fletcher and he was dropping in. He was magnificent, wasn't he?
I think it's... I don't want to exaggerate, you know. I prefer Fletcher when he scored two, but I think today he had one of his best games for us. His touch, his movement, the way he pulled out, even the last pass for the goal, it was magnificent. And they're willing to get in there and try to score. If Seb, at the end, he pulled it back, he was there trying to tap in. So I'm pleased for him. I know how difficult it is for the strikers. And if it was something that Fletcher wanted to play, it was here, because he missed the last two. So it was an important night for them.
Still thinking he's going to sign a striker, probably Gary, in January. But it's encouraging that Fletcher's starting to take to that lone striker role, because we've all questioned it historically, and I think we were justified in doing so, and he's improving every week.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent yesterday, and I think he's had some great games. He seems to be getting, I think last season we were worried that he just wasn't getting his fitness back at all, and he looked
a
shot
like
a
write off
last
season, wasn't it? Apart from a goal against Newcastle, it was pretty much a write off.
I think he's been getting better and better with each game. I think we all know that we need goals. And that's something that's missing from our play. So yeah, we're doing it straight. But I think we also, the side seems to badly lack pace at times. You know, we play this possession football, which is great, and when we look to burst out, sometimes we just can't get away from opposing teams' defenders and stuff like that. And I think just a little injection of pace somewhere in the side made a huge difference.
You kind of wish Adam Johnson had an extra yard of pace, but he wouldn't be playing for Sunderland if he did, would he, Craig? Realistically.
Well,
I don't think he's that sluggish.
No, he's not. But I think if he was a little bit faster, he would be.
I think he's a decent dribble. Like, he can dribble with the ball at a decent pace. It's like he's not going to hair onto the end of a ball in behind, and that's the kind of pace we're missing. And, like, you know, he tries, but like that's kind of what he's brought Buckley in for. And I know he sort of laid the pass off for the goal, but Jesus, he's dreadful, isn't he?
I thought he did okay.
Oh, God, he just keeps spooning the ball off the pitch all the time.
It's interesting, this opinion on Buckley. It's more very Marmite, isn't it? You see people sort of hating him,
other
people loving him.
Gus had a very specific idea for what he wanted to do, and he was frustrating when he gave the ball away, but the two key moments at the end of the game, he was involved in the goal and he nearly set up Larsson up with a fantastic pass.
True.
Sometimes you got to think, if you sacrifice giving the ball away a couple of times for two good moments, then is it worth it?
It's the manner he gives it away sometimes.
He's like the kind of antithesis of Gomez, who looks like, you know, looks very nice and everything. And then you've got Buckley at the other end of the scale who doesn't. So
I'm sure he's got a part to play, and he has done. He's laid off a couple of goals.
Good squad player, now, isn't he? Considering the price, you know what you paid for him. You didn't pay like sort of 6-7 million quid for him. So,
but if we want some pace in the team to supplement Fletcher, it's got to be better than him.
Yeah,
I think that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
I think. Well, I know Alvarez isn't quick, and Jack Rini's not exactly lightning, but they're two players in his position who are going to come into it more in the next couple of months.
Hopefully we'll keep saying that. Well, I remember doing a podcast about a month ago saying Jones and Jack O'Reilly will be back next game, because that's what Gus was saying, and then it's just week after week after week.
There's been a lot of talk about, I know it's just paper talk and what have you, but there's been a lot of talk about Jack O'Reilly going back home, hasn't there?
I don't think that'll happen.
I don't think it'll happen either, because he's on
more money here
he's
than
on
he
treble the wages
home,
than he was back home when he was winning stuff for.
But Gus was saying we haven't got that's not one of the clips that we've got, but he was saying about Alvarez, he's desperate to get him in, but Alvarez is desperate to play, but he doesn't know where to play him, he doesn't know how to use him yet in that system.
Well, it could be the game for that, I think.
And I think he'll come in for Wickham, you'd imagine, because he's suspended. So you'd imagine Alvarez.
Obviously I don't see him in training every day like Gus does and what have you, but I would have thought that would be more or less not a straight swap in terms of what each player gives you, but in terms of where you're going to play them, I would have thought that's probably a good fit for the whole game.
Yeah.
Well, the way Fletcher's playing it and his ability to link it up and stuff, you'd think, well, someone who's a little bit more technical like Alvarez and obviously you've got Johnson probably, there's potential for a bit of link up there, and Gomez was finding a lot of space in that like sort of third between the sort of midfield and forwards, which we haven't really seen him do a great deal of until now, which was encouraging.
We talked about that on the Into the Live podcast, didn't we, about, you know, it was important to win the second ball on the edge of our own box and then use it properly and find that third midfielder, and they did that a number of times where Gomez had space to run into.
And Johnson later on.
Definitely.
I think my argument with him playing centrally still stands. I think that was proof of it.
Well, I think
his goal and the chance he missed just before that.
If Chattarini's still around, I think that was further evidence. Nothing against Gomez, I thought had a good game, but imagine if you were getting it to him rather than Gomez in those areas, and you think about last season and the sort of performances he was putting in that kind of position, you think, well, you know, that will be quite exciting if he is available ever.
Yeah,
I know. Billy Jones is going to have to be rushed back, I think, now.
Well, he was.
The defence thing's interesting, Gareth, isn't it? Did you sort of notice as we were warming up? Because one of my mates just pointed out to me, I missed it on the telly, and says, if you saw the development there about Riviere getting injured, and that made me panic a little bit, if I'm being honest, because I thought they'd been planning for this all week, and I just had visions of Quatnes playing fullback, and just I wasn't happy at all.
I saw off the bench the Dottner came on, and I was like, oh, Dottner's there. I was thinking, it would be terrible if someone has been injured in the warm-up, and then Riviere came over and he couldn't walk, and I was like, oh, this is good, and that was it. I was thinking, then Bridcut and Quatters went over and were warming up a bit more vigorously, so I was thinking, well, your option is he goes Bridcut at right back.
Oh, God, no. Not after Southampton.
Or left back or whatever. Or you go with Quatters. Yeah. And he went with Quatters.
And O'Shea
they were all a bit shaky in the first 10 minutes. Yeah. But
I guess it's natural.
You've got to give Quatters credit for coming in so late. Maybe that helped
two
him.
Minutes, even after 2 minutes, he didn't help. He didn't help the situation by picking up a boot.
I thought that was a dive.
Really?
I haven't seen it again.
I think it was a foul. I'm not sure it was a yellow card. I mean, the one thing I always go on about, and I know everybody else does as well, I'm not alone, is consistency. Now, I'd love to have been able to ask the referee a question yesterday, because the best time to ask a referee a question is when you've won, so it doesn't sound like sour grapes. And I'd love to ask him, how come Catamol gets two, Quartes gets one, Cechtio gets seven? Like, I mean, if it was a standing joke yesterday, like, how many times does Thiot get to foul somebody before you eventually do something about it?
Do you think Catamol's foul after 10 seconds has helped influence the ref in that way? He's thought, you know, because arguably he's been booked in gyms before for that, hasn't he? Going against what most people think, I actually like him doing that, because I think if you can pick up a free one and you don't get booked, it lets them know you're here.
It was the right level of hack. It was like not hacky enough to get a yellow card.
I'd have preferred it to have been slightly less sort of petulant. I think he would have been quite justified to flash a yellow there.
I'd love to see him.
Go through somebody 50-50 and lift that ginger genius.
Like he did a few years ago with Thiot, didn't he? In the first few seconds, he did get booked that game. But I think you mentioned there about the yellow card perhaps being hard for Quatters. You don't think that's had a bearing as well? Because Catamol's went and he thought, okay, I'm not going to book him. It's 10 seconds in, and then 10 seconds later, somebody else does it, and he thinks, okay, I've got a short card here and there.
But then,
stop the authority
then
on things.
Wickham's was a stupid fellow. I'm not sure it's strong enough to be a booking. But again, going back to the same point, like how many of Thiot's were bookings before he actually got booked? I mean,
we were screaming.
Callback as well was a little lucky
after. He's the one I wanted to mention because,
I think we should definitely spend some time talking about him.
There's not much to say because he did pretty much nothing. But
that's what
it's great how he's in all the photos. All of the photos of players cuddling the Sunderland players all elated on one side and then callback.
That little rat.
Sheer dejection on the other side, isn't it? It's great.
I haven't got anything against the kid. I interviewed him a couple of times, nice kid, and he's done what he's done contract wise and what have you. But when they started rewriting folklore that he was some kind of genius of a football, he was good, steady away player. He did a good job for us and didn't let Sunderland down or whatever. But all of a sudden, he moves 13 mile up the road and he becomes this masterclass of football. It was absolute nonsense.
I completely agree there. And I think there's a few things. I think he was lucky not to get sent off. There was a moment in the second half where the referee played advantage and we didn't really have much of one, but it meant he didn't have to book him. And I think it was a yellow card and he would have had to send him off. So it was an easier option to give the advantage. Fair play to the ref, like giving the advantages and led to the goal.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be too harsh on him. But I think they made a big mistake. And I know it wasn't just Newcastle, it was the media at large, like Sky and stuff, because he's crossed the divide. But they put him on the front of the programme. He's been mouthing off all week.
Made it about him, the game, didn't they?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. They've made the game about someone who's essentially a sideways passing midfielder. Not a game changer, not a game winner. He's not an Adam Johnson or, for them, a Sissoko or potentially a Perez. You're talking about someone who, at best, is going to keep the ball, maybe win it back for you. And he was virtually anonymous.
It's kind of like all eyes were on him as well.
It's just wrong player to make the main man for you if you're Newcastle. Completely the wrong player.
They just don't have a plan. You watch them and it's like, we'll get the ball to Sissoko and then he's going to run with it. First time I've seen him that close up. And he was really impressive. Superb. I thought he was excellent and you just think if they lose him, they're going to be in trouble. But the same. If you go back with Newcastle over the years or whatever, they've had individuals and it's under Pardew. It's like, well, build a team around this one person. I say build a team around them, have one good player and make them do everything. And then when they go, all they can do is try and find a replacement
for
that one player.
Now they'd be in trouble, wouldn't they?
Well, there's no There's no team there. It's just, I mean, Perez, he's done exceptionally well for a young lad to come over from the Spanish second division to play as well as he has, and he looked good yesterday.
Yeah.
And he was unlucky with that shot. It looked like it was in for money from where I was sitting, and what a save by Pantilimon. I thought that was better than the tip over from Sissoko.
He dummied Wes Brown as well. He done well.
Long range shots, Gareth. Because like you say, that there's no creativity particularly in their team. And I was saying to someone at work, a Newcastle fan, you could argue they had in Perez and Sissoko maybe the two best players on the pitch, so you give them nines each, right? But the rest of their team were fives, whereas we were all eights. Like we were a team, we beat them as a team, whereas they had two individuals. And I agree with you, they hang the team on one individual. They don't build it, they hang it. It's like a coat hanger. It's like they're hoping he's gonna like fashion something.
You're not the best for coat hangers. It's a bit of old banter there, bringing the band back from the.
But I mean, I don't want to focus talking about them too much. But
coat hangers.
Their best spells came when Sissoko was able to have an influence. Then there were periods when he had no influence and they did nothing. And then as soon as he rose to prominence and we struggled with him because he's a big physical lad.
Did people see his tweet?
Who's
Sissoko?
No, I didn't even know he was on the Twitter.
Yeah, he tweeted something on the night saying, "Very, very sad this evening after losing to bitter rival Sunderland," and then just posted a picture of himself.
I'm gonna look that up later.
Just a picture
like
of
a frowny face,
looking into the camera. Looking in the camera, not even looking sad. Just a normal, indifferent face. Looking in the camera, saying very, very something about losing a rival Sunderland, and then just post a picture of himself.
He's got some. No, he didn't. He must have someone who's controlling his Twitter account who's completely misjudged what this game is. Like, that's bizarre.
Yeah, but go and look it up now. If you're listening now, look it up.
If you look at Newcastle generally, though, and I was at the game yesterday, I went along with a couple of Northern Echo lads and was talking to Richard after the game, and he was saying about how, you know, just an example of the differences between the organisation of the two teams is when Stephen Taylor went off, nobody dropped in.
I think the Dummett went to centre back.
But nobody from midfield dropped in. Like, there was essentially a three. It's just, you know, someone's got to take that responsibility from the middle of the park, because you're going to distort your shape completely if you essentially go into a back three. There's no game intelligence. When you watch them, it's like, let's get bodies in here.
Look at the bloke
and
who's managing them.
Well, yeah.
But the passes is up.
But he went for it, so it's fine.
People are listening and have looked it up now.
That's probably the worst sad face I've ever seen.
It's just a bizarre.
Did anyone tweet
it? Bizarre, isn't it?
Someone should tweet it. I like how he's done some smileys on your phone.
He's done some angry emoticons, though.
Angry emoticons.
My own face is doing just neutral, but angry emoticons do emotion for me.
Didn't he make a comment as well? I haven't read it, but I'm sure I read that he'd made a comment saying that he admired Arsenal yesterday as well, or something like that. I'm not sure.
I'll send the papers in there.
Yeah.
Send a room million overdrive on it.
Anyway, you know,
the many faces of Moussa Sissoko.
Yeah,
but let's not worry about them.
Forget them.
Much.
Exactly. We won.
No,
it's nice to stick the boot in. Goof run. Jesus. He's appalling, him. And Sammy Amiobi is the most bizarre footballer. You think Gomez is bizarre? He was skinning Virginie, but it was like, that doesn't really matter, because he's just going to hoof it to the other side of the pitch.
I don't know how he can kick it so far with those legs, because it doesn't look like he's got any power in them whatsoever.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen his first touch. That goes quite a far way. So he really puts his mind to it. You know.
His brother's obviously been teaching him.
Try and take advantage of our full-back situation enough, do you feel?
They didn't at all.
It's not good enough to do it.
No, especially when you think, like Gareth said, fairly nervy early doors, and O'Shea gave one away, lost the ball horrendously, and they nearly went through and scored, and you're thinking, oh dear, they're going to have a right go at me and test him out, and they didn't bother.
There was nearly one of the greatest...
Fran was up against him.
There was nearly one of the greatest derby glolls ever. In the first half, when Jack Anik threw the ball past Colaccini, and Adam Johnson was about a yard from a tap-in before he recovered.
I can't remember.
That would have been amazing.
Someone was talking to me about this at work, and I was like nodding, like what's he talking about?
It was brilliant. He was like, got the ball, and he was like, calm down, lads, calm down. threw it, and he was like,
Colin Cheney sort of had to slide, yeah, didn't he? Yeah, he had to slide. He was like, Johnson was in.
Oh, it was just a tap in for Johnson if he hadn't slid it away.
Do you know what it is? As much as I would hate to see it happen to a young lad, but he would have went to bits if we'd scored there. It would have just been like, you might as well have just lined up to have a shot after that, because he would have been shot to bits, wouldn't he?
Aye.
It's well, that's the first time I think we've beaten them when Colaccini's played as well.
Is it?
I think
Bobby Moore.
Well, he's finished, isn't he? He looks rotten. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, obviously, only seen it once, but what?
For the goal, they were all over the place.
That foul on Fletcher was
shocking. That was awful. Flying knee.
And that's as well. I think, you know, it's hard not to imagine that wasn't deliberate, because Fletcher's had problems with his back.
Agreed.
As well.
That's what I was seeing.
And also, but he was in behind as well. He'd misjudged that. He wasn't going for the ball. He was going for the man. He'd misjudged it because Fletcher had spun him. Yeah. He was in. But that was right in front of me, and he absolutely smashed him. And they were furious. Poyet was swearing his head off at the fourth official.
Said,
oh my god! Yeah, he like saying "oh my god." That's the word of the moment on the bench after Out the Door the other week, when he was like, "oh my god," when Aguero scored, and like I noticed it's now creeping into press conferences and that with
as long as you don't start showing the OMG. Oh, I was dying.
That's like loads of lol. At the end,
that's what Tarrago.
That was Tarrago personified at the end, wasn't it?
Wasn't it?
Brilliant. Just the sheer joy in his face.
Aye. And that thrust from Quetta as well as a must see.
It's
bizarre.
I know.
Just in the background, a little like.
Yeah.
Thrust. I can't think of a better way to put it.
It's a swing. That's what it is.
Aye. But it's a swing. It's almost imperceptible. It's so subtle.
I know. It's Catamore passes him, you're just like, oof.
We all feel like doing it.
We're going on about badge kissing and that, but you know what? Seb Larson can kiss it as long as he wants, because he'll probably finish his career here now. And where's this energy come from?
I don't know, because I tell you what, there's been plenty of times in the past when I've slagged him off, and I think
Gary. I mean,
I'll hold my hands up. He's been fantastic.
I said last week that, you know, there's never been a Sunderland player that I've changed my opinion as much towards than Seb Larson. Again, though, like the Fletcher thing, though, I think previous criticism has been justified. It's him, isn't it? He's changed as a player.
I don't know,
eventually he's been given a better role by Poyet. He's been given a specific role rather than just a headless chicken he was under Martin O'Neill and De Canio. But you know, he's still.
Sold him down the river by playing him in a midfield too. I mean,
O'Neill did that first as well. To be fair,
times under Bruce when he went missing, and he just seems lately under Poyet, he must have this specific brief that he's given.
Exactly.
This, and it just goes, and he's getting stuck in and that now. Like, whereas before, if he lost the ball, his head would go down and he'd be going like that, which is great to do on a podcast because nobody can see what I'm doing with my hands.
But everyone will know exactly what you mean.
But, and now it's not, he's chasing all the way back, he's putting his foot in, he's looking to go there and win the ball back, which he never really did before. Not for me, anyways.
And also, Craig, he could have walked away as well out of contract.
No, I know, he wanted to stay.
Especially, you know, he hadn't been, because he'd been coming out, hadn't he, and saying he wasn't happy playing centre midfield and all that, and that would have been easy for him to do a call back and walk away. So you've got to give him credit for his loyalty too, as well.
Glad we kept him and not call back, because he's better than him.
Good bit of business.
I'd rather have him
than
call back.
I think as well with Larson, when you look, he's got 118 appearances now. Him and Catamore, 118 each. They've been there similar length of time, and you look at it and you think, you know, the those two, you know, the kinds of players were in a few years' time, they'll be looked back on as, well, you know, legends might be a strong term, but, you know, you'd expect them to eclipse Bardsley's Premier League appearance record. It was 176 games, I think, Phil Bardsley had for Sunderland.
I know what you're saying about the legends. I mean, God. Patrice Cartwright's a legend. He only scored against Newcastle. I think them two lads have earned that.
If he'd got that goal at the end, I mean, he could have gone down. Like,
Colaccini would have gone as well.
Because
we were saying, well, you know, all right, he didn't pull him back, but he impeded him, and that may have stopped him ultimately being able to score the goal.
So he's a dive every now and again, Larson, as well. So it's maybe a little bit surprising, isn't it?
Well, did you see? he made a point of when he got clattered by Toyota, because Toyota hadn't, I'm going back to the same point again, but Toyota had been sort of totting up, and Toyota caught him, and people would, like, around me, were saying, oh, get up, man, you're not that badly yet. And I was like, it's not because he's hurt. He's making sure the referee knows how many times, mate, you know? And he made sure the referee knew, like, they weren't happy with how much he was getting away with.
Well, they have to, like, some of our players in the past, like, you know, we might as well hark back to the 5-1, because, you know, the likes of Joey Barton bleating on about it, the sad little man. And it's like, well, you know what? That's exactly what we weren't doing back then. Like, you had the likes of Nolan and Barton refereeing that game. Now, it's about time we've got the strong characters. Like, I heard someone say, it, like, John O'Shea's now played against Newcastle 18 times in his career, and he's not lost one.
Really?
I don't know if... I can't verify it, but that's what someone told me. You've got Poyet, another one who's got a bit of a hex on them as a player as well, apparently. Yeah, like, they all say it to me, he was a scourge of them.
Yeah. Well, he scored the goals in the semi-final of the cup, didn't he?
He always scored against them, apparently. Yeah.
You've got the likes of, like, Larson. I know he's been here, well, when we've not won, but
he's played in the last eight derbies. He made his debut, it was the week after he made his debut, because he scored
at Liverpool, and then we had the warm derby.
He should have been sent off, actually, for handball on the line, I remember. Early in the game.
But that was Bruce's last one, and you know what Gary's saying.
Argue's only win.
Yeah.
As a manager.
And you know, well, two numpty managers coming up against each other. And what Gary's saying about Larson then is, under Bruce, I wasn't a fan of him at all then. And I think since, when he's had sort of better, more intelligent managers, they've found something to do with him. I didn't really want us to sign him. I felt like, oh, we need set pieces, so we'll bring him in.
And then he stopped being good at those.
Yeah,
as well.
Well, I think he
changed man, though.
I think that's maybe the first season he played in a different system, and, you know, he scored 7 or 8 goals, didn't he? So, you know, I think that.
The thing for me is, like Craig was saying there, but under Bruce, that 5-1, we just didn't have any leaders, didn't have anybody just to say, hang on a minute, lads, this is not good enough. This is a derby game. This is against Newcastle. Let's get hold of the game by the scruff of the neck sort of thing. We didn't have any of that. No. And you look at Hull now, and I don't think they've got any leaders either. You know, it's just symptomatic of a Bruce side. Hull are now going through the good old Steve Bruce unwinning period that he seems to have with every club that he's at, which goes on for God knows how long.
Predictable this would happen for him at all.
Yeah.
He dropped Huddleston the other week, which was, I think, the first time he dropped him. And it's that's desperation, isn't it? He was your main man.
He's recalled Ince now.
Has he? He'll obviously set the place on fire. Every time he goes out on loan.
Well, look at the whole Ben Arfa situation. Hull, in general, it all ties in.
Ben Arfa, it's a classic Bruce, isn't it?
Oh, totally. Well, but the whole thing...
He'll do a good footballer to do get him. Oh, that's why they don't play him. Because he's an idiot.
Bruce, he brings them in, doesn't know where he's going to play them, sort of flings them on the pitch with no real clue what's going to happen, and then invariably they go on these running of defeat.
To be fair to him, he struck it lucky really when he had Jan and Bent and that doing well, but then it wasn't his fault that they did one, but when it was like, right, you're the manager, what's the answer? And he didn't have one. He literally just didn't have one.
Is any other?
I hope it continues on Boxing Day.
Any other Geordies we're going to have a pop?
No. Well,
Lee Clark, hilarious on the weekend. No, eh? Leonard fell down the pit in the jungle or something.
We're going to obviously, you know, we're not far from the end. So if we're talking about individual players and midfielders and stuff, I think a special mention for Liam Bridcut again.
Right,
it was excellent when he came on. I mean, we have a situation now, don't we, Craig, where we have an answer to Lee Cattermole walk and any sort of disciplinary tightrope later on, you just put Bridcut on. 2 games in a week, you can play Bridcut.
I like him better from the start. It took him a little while. It's expected. It's a frantic game. But it took him a little while to get into it. And I was a bit... We were thinking, yep, right decision. You know, like for like, Cattermole's walking a tightrope. Cattermole himself probably knew, yeah. I mean, you could see it was great when he went off and they were having that bit, like, talking and that to each other. You just thought, aye, he's not... Cattermole's not the type to go off in the huff, is he? You know, like, he knows, fair enough. But then when he did get into it, he was exceptional. He was winning some really good challenges.
Good interceptions as well.
Can we talk about Lee Cattermole's, what are you talking about, face that he does? I quite enjoy it.
It's hard to do faces.
You can't, I know.
How do you do a face?
I don't know.
People don't know. Watch it. When he, he does it after that, after he clatters whoever it was after 15 minutes, when he clattered
him. The innocent looking thing.
Yeah, he kind of walks away, and then people having a go at him, and he does this face. I'll do it for you, and then you can. He just kind of goes...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like that. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? It's fine.
Is it as good as Sissoko's sad face?
It's better.
Alright.
We need to just do, like, you know, we need a visual element of this podcast. We need to go into
podcast.
The world.
Yeah. That's what we need.
I'm pretty confident that all our listeners who are on Twitter listening to this will have searched out the Sissoko thing straight away.
No doubt.
I'm not sure if I can help you with the Catamol thing.
I know which one he means.
Yeah, it's good. Like, he does it a lot where it's like...
Larson kind of did it as well when he missed that chance at the end.
He just kind of went.
He kind of like went, and then he like did it. He motioned with his hands as if to say that, you know what, when the ball's rolling, the referee pulls a free kick back, and he does a little thing with his hands to say the ball was moving. He kind of did that, and then just kind of threw his hands up in the air to say, fair enough. Aye. As if he was like beginning to defend himself for a minute or something. That was quite funny.
I think he might be missing on Friday by the look of it, from what I saw, because they came out for the warm down. And he went on, had a little run, and then just was like, no, and walked off.
But it's going to be interesting, and that's going to be interesting because somebody had made...
Chance for Rodwell.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it might have been you who made the point last week, somebody was going to say Rodwell. That Rodwell needs a more specific... We just said there that Larson's been given specific jobs and tasks and duties on the field, and it's helped his game, and I think one of you guys said last week, it would be interesting to see Rodwell play in that position.
That's Rodwell's role going forward. Yeah. That's it, that box-to-box player. If that's where he's going to play at Sunderland, if he's going to become something at Sunderland, that's it, I think.
Like, big game for him, then.
If he comes in, he might not play.
Oh, well, he's got options, hasn't he? He's got options. That's the thing, that the injuries are clearing up. Jones should be fit, and he should come back. And Jaccarini was fit, but they just thought, we'll give him another training session. Gus was saying that they said they'd leave him at the academy, have trained today. And then they sort of went, we're going to bring him. Then they said stay. And then when obviously Riviere was out, he would have been on the bench. But as a result, he would have got on, but he was fit. But they just wanted to give him a bit, just be sure, which is a good thing. And we won the game, so you know, as far as gambles go, you know, substitutions and making substitutions at the right time and stuff. And those types of things, making decisions on who's going to play left back and all that, it all came off from.
Well, the Johnson thing that he talked about on the audio was very interesting, because he sort of, you know, most people, I think probably myself included, when he missed that chance, my first thought would be right to get him off and get somebody else on. But Poirier's been proved right. The point was, because he made that chance and showed that he could get into that position, let's leave him on. And
And in a game like that, unless he's injured, I wouldn't take him off. Got to keep him on at all the times.
I'm near superstition or anything. Just before the game, in my head, Johnson today, the man. He's done it a couple of times, and it's just a game for him. That game. Yeah.
I know he's had an indifferent time at Sunderland. Some might say because of the fee and everything. But will he go? Will he go down as a? You know, a bit of a legend.
I was
going to
say, it's a good point. It's one I was going to raise, actually, because he's kind of paid for his transfer fee now. He won't be remembered for, you know, his indifferent career or form, as Gareth's saying. Now he's going to be known. If he scores against Newcastle at St James Park 3 years in a row,
imagine
then
you,
that he's going to be remembered for that isn't he?
Does that mean we have to walk around calling him the Geordie Slayer? Shola was after one goal in six
Young
games.
Chris Young has called that the Geordie Slayer. Imagine if he'd got that.
We'll have him on the
season.
Podcast in about 5 years when he's retired, just talking about his Derby goals, won't we?
Imagine
Derby special Adam Johnson.
Imagine the
go for a pint afterwards.
If he'd got that, if he'd got that goal last season when he went on that run and he hit the post, that would have been one for the collection as well.
I would have just been racking him up. I think there's more to come from him under Poyet, like as he builds a team. I think if you get a right back who's going to be going outside him, I think, you know,
there's
still something there. I know, like, not everyone's a big fan, but there's something there. You don't score goals like you did on a weekend.
I'd like to see, you know, more consistency. I'd like to see him do, because we know he's capable of it. I'd like to see him do it week in, week out. That would be brilliant. I don't dislike him as a player.
You've got to give him credit for
he's
the.
He's got a hell of a lot of talent.
For the run for the goal as well.
Unbelievable.
And that was pace with the ball. He ran at pace with strength and.
Reminded
in
of
the
his,
90th
his,
minute.
His performance against Fulham last season. He scored a hat trick in a way.
And I think, in a way, to Nick Craig's little piece, I think he's Johnson, when we signed him, for the money we signed him, he was probably our coat hanger, really, wasn't he? Because we hung everything on a £10 million kit and we expected him to go and just look great in a good, very good Man City side, and we expected him to just come in and do it by himself, I think. And maybe we've been asking a bit too much of the lad, me included.
But maybe that's a mentality that's been drilled into us over the years, where we've had individuals that have done things for us. You know, we had a bit of a team going on under Reid, but we still had Phillips and Quinn, people like that. And then under Bruce, we had Bent, things like that. So we've had like individuals that we've relied on, and now it feels as though. Almost were like one of those teams in the World Cup who are definitely greater than the sum of the parts, where he's got it sorted out. And we're two or three players away, and he's got to get the right ones. And
I wish Fargus had came here.
Do you reckon?
I've seen him at QPR.
I'm not sure.
I think he looks like a good link.
Following on from both those points, I think you're right, Gary, and I think the difference between hanging your team around somebody like Kabay or Sissoko, as they're doing now, that's the way they're in the middle, they're at the heart of it. Johnson's always at the periphery because he's a wide man, and he's only going to benefit from having better players in the team around him. And if we do manage to get those two or three players, he's going to be someone who's capable of flourishing, I think.
One final point, and we're going to hear from Gus first on it, and then we'll quickly discuss it because we're more or less out of time.
I think, you know, we shouldn't be talking about no, this has to be the change. Confidence, a word that everybody uses a lot, which I understand, but I don't use it all the time. There is no more confidence than when you beat the biggest rivals in the last minute. So next week, no excuses. Next week, everybody full of confidence. And then you need to create, you need to put the ball in the net and win another game. Because that's going to change the season. Not today, the next game, you know, winning two or three in a row.
Right, this is the important thing, isn't it, chaps? Because, yes, we've beaten Newcastle and it's great, but we've been saying all along we need to turn these draws into wins. We did that for one game. We can't let it stop now, Gary. We can't go backwards now and get it, you know, let Hull come in, grind out a 0-0 or something.
No, I mean, two things, really. One, I know it's a cliche, but momentum is everything. You know, getting that run of games. I mean, we proved that last season. You know, that run of games to get ourselves out of the muck that we were already in. But two, from a personal point of view, I haven't got anything against Bruce as a man, but I'd really hope we comfortably stuff them so he doesn't come out with it. Is it because I am Geordie again? Do you know what I mean? I cannot deal with that. It's just nonsense.
It is indeed.
I think that, you know, they've got a good chance over the next, you know, week or so to get 6 points. I don't think it's unrealistic to think they could. And you've got to look at players, you know, who might be out, like possibly Larson. Wickham's out. If Alvarez is banging on the door, you know, he's saying, play me, like Poyet's saying, right then, you can go and play there, and like, let's see what you've got. And that's a good thing, and players have got to take responsibility then on the pitch and prove themselves and make it difficult for Poyet to drop them. And
like Craig says, same with Rodwell, right?
Yeah,
there's your
exactly.
chance. There you go.
There you go, exactly.
It's funny, I'd kind of forgotten last season, when we beat them 2-1 at home, Newcastle, who did we play the week after and get beat 1-0?
Yeah,
all the way.
God, yeah.
So it's the other way around this time, like the way, and then we're
playing,
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's a complete parallel or whatever. Mm. It's just funny the way the fixtures sometimes line up like that. And then Villa's coming up as well, and Villa was a game away that Giaccherini missed that chance from like minus 1 yard. Like, I don't know how he got it over the bar. And you know,
and he got a disallowed offside goal at home with them, didn't he?
So it's like,
which was harshly,
those kind of fine margins we're talking about, like turning 0-0s into 1-0s, which we did our best not to do on Sunday, but eventually did it. If we can create that many chances again, surely we're going to put away teams like Hull in the terrible form they're in.
Well, you know, if Fletcher can get himself in the right position to be the recipient of one of those chances, you're fairly confident that he's going to stick them away, aren't you?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. But you never know, do you? It's like, you just never know with Sunderland, do you? You just don't know. But, you know, there might be a bit of excitement. You know, Boxing Day, coming off the back of the derby, Boxing Day game's always, you know, there's an extra, you know, bit of edge to it because everyone's still probably half cut or on the way to being fully cut again.
Back on it.
So, and, you know, people got people get tickets crowd, for Christmas and that. Yeah. And, you know, Alvarez coming in, a bit of excitement, hopefully. Yeah, I think it's positive, but it's we'll
just,
be talking about...
It just sounds too easy. We'll be talking, it just doesn't work like
we'll
that.
We'll be talking about...
When you're a Sunderland fan, it doesn't work
we'll
like
be talking
that.
About...
A 0-0 or a 1-0 loss.
The whole game, we'll be talking about the whole game and the Villa game tomorrow night on the Interlive podcast, on FM podcast. So that's coming every the next two Tuesdays, and Wise Men say he'll be back for the new year, January the 5th. So... We should have done like a highlight of 2014, shouldn't we? That's what we should have done, but probably haven't got
time.
Time
or the inclination, I don't think, unfortunately.
All of it. It's been mental, isn't it?
Right, okay, we'll wrap
this up.
It's
been a kind of year. Like,
yeah, we'll wrap this up now, though, because we want to go for a quick...
Yeah, you went to Wembley and that, didn't I? I don't want to talk about that.
We want to go for a quick drink.
Imagine, I mean, it could be worse.
A pint.
It could be worse. You could have lost a derby and not got to Wembley all in the space of a week.
Oh.
That's a burn.
Aye.
Exactly. You know. On that note, thanks for listening. Over and out.